Hello and welcome to this podcast with your host, Paul Miller. Today I talk with Martin Hepp and Jamie Taylor. We look at the good relations vocabulary, an approach which is being used to describe businesses and the products that they sell. Potentially, this transforms the way in which commerce is undertaken online. Early adopters include Best Buy and the O'Reilly Media Group, amongst others. For more information on this show and others in the series, please see the show notes at cloudofdata.com. Thank you. Martin, Jamie, thank you very much for joining me for this podcast today. Before we get into some of the detail around good relations, I'm just very briefly going to ask you to introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about your own background. So first off, Martin Hepp, hello, and thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for the invitation. My name is Martin Hepp. I'm a professor of e-business and general management at the Bundeswehr University in Germany. Before that, I spent some years at STI, formerly Dairy in Innsbruck, at Florida Gulf Coast University, and at the University of Würzburg in Germany. My original background is business information systems and management, actually. So gradually, over more than a decade, I dig deeper into the technology side of the web. I've been trying to use semantic web technologies for e-commerce for, well, almost a decade. I started digging into that in around 2001. And I was always surprised about the gap between more than 100 scientific papers talking about the potential of using semantic web technologies, and in particular ontologies, for future e-commerce applications and in particular more precision in search and better reuse of data. And on the other hand, so little industry strength examples of ontologies of applications in that field. So over the past years, I created the Good Relations Vocabulary or Ontology, which is an ontology for describing the relationships between business entities like companies, their products, offers, prices, product models, and the like. The name Good Relations is motivated by the fact that what we usually call offers, like someone is offering to sell a book or to rent a car or something like that, is basically a relationship between someone and something. So when I'm saying you can have my car for $100 a day, then this is not a property of the car. It is a promise that I as an individual make about a product. So it's a relationship between someone and something, and that is why the ontology is called Good Relations.
Okay, and we'll be digging more into good relations and what it can do in a moment. First, though, Jamie Taylor from Freebase. Hi, Jamie, and can you briefly introduce yourselves to listeners?
Hi, Paul. Certainly, Jamie Taylor. I'm the Minister of Information at MetaWeb, the company behind Freebase, which is a socially managed semantic database. My background is I actually have a PhD in behavioral economics, of all things. That got me thinking about how you actually represent the types of offers that people were making such that you could actually create efficient markets. And looking at that online, I got involved in and founded a company that built contract management systems for large enterprises, trying to make all of the obligations and contracts apparent, transparent and reportable, so that you could actually know what was in your portfolio of obligations. I've always been interested in this sort of conjunction of structured and unstructured data. And my role here at Freebase is actually working on the data team and thinking about both the tools and methodologies that we can use to bring data into Freebase and make it available to a wider community of web developers and webmasters.
Okay, good. And there's an overlap there with some of the things we're talking about with good relations too. So excellent. Now, Martin, you described good relations at the outset there as a vocabulary for describing business entities and their products and offers around them. For someone who can sort of understand that at a conceptual level, that you can describe an organization, you can describe its products, and you can describe the ways in which they are offered, how does what good relations do translate into something sort of practical and tangible that, a web developer would be able to do something with?
Okay, I think the most important thing to explain up front is that, in my opinion, if you want to share data over distributed information systems and you want to use global data structures for that, the key requirement on those data structures is that you find classes and properties that are valid for many scenarios, for many people, and over a longer period of time. So the key challenge in building conceptual structures for exchanging any kind of information is finding overlap in the very many ways that different people, different organizations, or different application scenarios would represent similar things. So now, from a very practitioner's perspective, good relations is a schema, a data dictionary, a vocabulary or ontology, however you name it, that allows exposing information about a company, its products, and its offers, and also its product, its master data, like, for example, product models and data sheets, in a way that can be published on the web in a persistent manner, so that anybody in the value chain, customers, consumers, or retailers, anybody offering value-added services, can extract and reuse that information with less human effort. Maybe the whole goal of good relations becomes clearer if you look at the current situation. Most shops have structured representations of their range of products. Like any small job has a relation database holding all the products and the current pricing and the like. Now, when you make this information available over the web using a standard web shop, the information from the database is regularly represented in dynamically created web pages that you can look at in your browser. So you have price information, UPC codes, maybe weight and delivery options and the like. Now this is sufficient for humans, but anybody who wants to reuse that that information has to extract it and process it in a very tedious way. So imagine someone wants to compare three types of MP3 players over the web, then what you and consolidate all that he'll find in a single Excel sheet, then you'll end up using Google and visiting lots of pages and copying and pasting small chunks of information from various pages. This is not only tedious, but it's also in a sense very frustrating, because at the origin of the data, it is available in a structured form. So what good relations does is providing like a generic form, like really a paper form, like an Excel sheet structure, that can be easily populated by standard data sources available in the shop, and that can be carried over existing web infrastructure, if you use the RDFA syntax, and can be extracted and reused and combined with other sources by anybody on the web. So that's the basic idea. And the key contribution is finding a data model, a schema, for typical commerce scenarios that is granular enough to empower a meaningful processing, automated processing, on the basis of that data. So it should not mix apples and oranges and use plain strings for everything. On the other hand, it should not be too, at least not require too much detail, so that it would be very, it would be prohibitively expensive for shop owners to populate it. One feature that is embedded in good relations is that you can decide about the level of detail in your descriptions. So if you just have a string telling what your product is, you can reuse that string. if you have classified all your products according to an established ontology or have a structured representation of product features that distinguish like the name of the feature and the value, then you can expose that as well. And this kind of incremental approach towards a more fine-grained representation will also allow other people on the web to help lift weakly structured data to more highly structured data.
Okay, so how big is the full vocabulary? You said there that in a lot of cases you won't actually use all of it, but how big is the total thing that someone might need to take a look at and get to grips with?
Well, the basic structure of good relations is just like five classes. So you have a class for business entities, you have a class for products, you have a class for product models, and you have a class for offers. And you have a class for shop locations. So those are the five main classes. All in all, good relations define something like 100 conceptual elements. Still, it's a rather small vocabulary. So I think you can learn the basics of good relations in a day or two. But basically, you just need those five classes for describing your offer. You can go into arbitrary detail, like specifying shipping charges by state and forwarding company. You can give a quantity discount information or omit it as you like. So a typical description of a product can be like 10 lines or 20 triples, or it can be 200 triples, depending on how much detail you have available at the origin, and maybe depending on how much data you want to make available for anybody.
And this is the sort of information, as you said, that a lot of, especially larger retailers, will hold in their master data management systems already.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes. I mean, it helps. I mean, of course, the better the quality of your internal representations and the more granular they are, the easier it will be to map that to a good relations recipe. But as said, good relations supports varying degrees of granularity. In the long run, there will be an incentive for companies to describe themselves in a more granular manner, because that will increase visibility for specific searches. But to get started with it, you can just take the amount of detail you have and populate good relations. Any shop in the world can currently create a meaningful and sufficient description for each individual item automatically. Just to give you an example, we wrote a small application called Google Feeds Converter that can convert existing shopping feeds provided for Google into a good relations representation. So those feed formats are very lightweight, so they don't exploit the full level of detail of good relations, and thus they are inferior in terms of what types of queries they will support. But still, if you have those feeds, you can automatically lift them to the web of data. And in the long run, there will be, I expect, something like a new a second generation search engine optimization business, where people will really think about how they could add more detail so that they will be found, that the likelihood of being found by prospective customers will increase.
Are there any complexities in the translation from my existing view of my own product base? I've got this large database. It knows all about all my widgets. I've got a shop database that knows the locations of all my shops. And I've expressed that in my own way, as most retailers do. How much of a job is it to convert that to the standard form that Good Relations uses so that my shops and my products can be compared with Jamie's?
As for the basics, I think the lifting, we have a Good Relations cookbook section in the Good Relations Wiki. Maybe we can link to it from when the podcast will be published. So there are typical recipes that I think any webmaster, web designer will be able to populate from the existing data structures. In particular, if you use a standard shop software for many shop applications like Magento, OS Commerce, the Joomla, and VirtuMart combo, there exist already free plugins that do the transformation. So basically, it would just be like understanding what your own attributes in your database represent and how that maps to good relations. So the better your schema, the easier it is. But as said, I think usually it will be it will probably take a day or two, depending on if the quality of the underlying schema is somehow okay, at least, then it shouldn't be a big job. Of course, if you have lots of data quality issues, like incomplete data, invalid character, unexpected invalid characters, and the like, then it can be a bit more tedious. But still, I mean, we're talking about days. We're not talking about very large engineering projects.
Okay. And where do you expect the early adoption to lie? Do you expect it to be with the product manufacturers, with the wholesalers, or with the retailers?
It's a good question. Actually, I think it will be a combination of the manufacturers and the retailers. Retailers, anybody operating a web shop, have already now a strong incentive to add good relations, rich markup, because there's quite some evidence now that if you add that, first of all, you get a little bit of improved rendering in both Google and Yahoo. In Yahoo, it's officially confirmed. In Google, we made some experiments that strongly indicate that Google is honoring at least good relations price information by now, but they have not spoken about that publicly so far. So for retailers, there's an incentive to take that bit of effort to add it, because you'll appear in more beauty on the directly in the search results. And Yahoo collected some nice evidence that those pepped up search results lead to an increase in conversion rates. That's the one thing. The second thing that is a bit more interesting is that Jay Myers from Best Buy and several others made experiments that show that if you add that markup to your web page, you not only get a better rendering, but you also get a better ranking in search engines. Again, there's no official confirmation for it, but there's growing evidence that this is true. And I think this is because such data represents better content in the eyes of the search engine, because it's more specific and thus has a higher entropy. So for retailers, there's an immediate incentive to add it, and it's an easy business. But to tap the full power of it, we will also need a product model master data, what we call, what consumers know as data sheets, information that a particular camera make and model has certain features. If we can tap, if we can publish such data in a structured form, then good relations allows linking the data from the manufacturers, the data sheets, with all the offers, and this will empower much more precise search. So, for example, if you and your shop use a UPC code, which is a strong identifier, and the manufacturer of the product publishes the data sheet also using good relations, then a novel matchmaking service or an augmented search engine can use the richly structured description of the from the data sheet to help consumers find your offer, even though you don't expose like all the product features on your page. There must be just sufficient information on your page so that your offer can be linked with the model master data. Now, so if a manufacturer adds respective markup to the data sheets on their web page pages, this will help anybody selling this product or trying to sell this product to communicate all distinct features, the individual value proposition, to those interested clients. So there's a strong incentive for the manufacturers, and if both sides are there, then we'll quickly have a very strong data space. And there are several sources for this structured product model master data on the manufacturer's side, but of course, there's huge potential for increasing the value of the already huge and growing amount of data from the retail side.
And this also links through to a conversation, I guess, Jamie, we had, 3-4 years ago now, in terms of, you know, one of the views of Freebase being this canonical place for enthusiasts to come together and to describe products like their favorite Canon camera.
Right. And I think this, you know, definitely fits right in with that conversation that we were having. I think it was probably about 4 years ago, which is, you know, to really make a lot of these things work, you really do need to have, you know, fundamentally that shared vocabulary so that, you know, when you go to actually mark up your product data and say that I have this offer and I am releasing or I have this product that's available that was manufactured by this group and I am a certain type of retailer, unless you're actually using web scale identifiers, that ability to do this sort of merging that Martin was describing really is too difficult. I think there's really, you know, things are operating at two different levels here, and I think Martin has sort of played them out exactly right in both his description of good relations and actually the way good relations works sort of from a practical point of view. And that is, it really helps this notion of findability, that I do actually have an offer on the web, and I need to make sure that the search engines and actually sort of any mechanized system I have for discovering content knows what type of thing it is that I'm actually offering. And that really comes in the form of a vocabulary and a method of markup. So things like RDFA or HTML5 microdata, you know, are the primary ways of sort of thinking about those types of insertions. And then there's this sort of higher order problem, and this gets to sort of, you know, how hard and how far do people really need to take that. And if you want to be able to say, well, I'm offering, you know, this iPod Nano, which was manufactured by Apple, and I want you to be able to engage in some sort of comparison shopping, then having a notion of a web scale identifier that says, you know, this is Apple Incorporated, the manufacturer of consumer technology, and not Apple Records or some other manufacturer who uses the word Apple in their name, you really need to have the strong identifier. And Freebase has a repository for those entities so that you can get sort of a general description of them, but also know what the strong identifier that can be used sort of web-wide is located. Freebase can be that repository, both for the manufacturers and for the people who are making these offers.
And so would we expect the end user who's searching for their iPod Nano to be going through Freebase, or is Freebase simply exposing this information through its APIs for someone else to build the application?
Well, Freebase.com as a destination site is sort of, you know, the flagship application that's been built on top of the Freebase public APIs. And one of the things that, you know, we've been working on is actually creating indexes within the Freebase database for well-known sources of information about different entities that are in Freebase. And so you'll find those in our web links, things like at our last user group meeting, we were describing how we have a WordPress plugin that's being developed so that you can actually tag things in WordPress and have them connected to Freebase, and Freebase then will know where that content is located on the web. Those types of things, you know, are sort of the direction I think that people will be able to use Freebase for. Inside Freebase, the database itself, of course, we have this notion of keys and authorities and location where those authoritative keys are being used. And these are the sort of web scale identifiers that, you know, we've been advertising for quite a while. And being able to reverse those out so that you can actually search on those is, I think, a very important part of the story.
Excellent. So we've talked then about what good relations is. We've talked about some of the ways in which it might help a retailer or a consumer. So where is it actually being used at the moment?
Well, it's. I think it's no overstatement to say that good relations is at least among the top two most populated ontologies, vocabularies on a web scale. If you look at the Pinglist semantic web statistics, for example, Best Buy, for example, has started to expose its full catalog of 460, I think, 1,000 items. A couple of months ago in good relations. They are updating this the respective representation every 24 hours. So you have every 24 hours, you have a complete dump of all 4,000 460,000 items online. Also, they expose current opening hours for more than 1,000 store locations across the USA. There are O'Reilly Media is using Good Relations in their full catalog pages, so all Good O'Reilly books and other products in their shops are described using Good Relations. On the consumption side, Yahoo is officially supporting Good Relations and has said there is strong evidence that at least a subset of Good Relations is also crawled and one variable among many in the current Google implementation. I mean, this is a suspicion, but there's some evidence for it. There are several other retailers supporting it. I'm in contact with at least three really huge players in the United States. I don't have clearance to tell names, but I expect there will be announcements within February. So really large groups. So on the retail side, small and really huge retail sites are adding respective Good Relations data. There's also a growing number of plugins for existing shop software. I already said that for Magento, there is a respective free plugin. For OS Commerce, for Joomla and Virtualmart. I heard that the Drupal UberCourt developers are planning on integrating Good Relations in RDFA in the next UberCard release. So I expect that, like, in the next couple of months for all major shop solutions, there will be standard extensions that help you publish respective rich metadata. We are also in the process of lifting the information from about 4,500 smaller shops with more than 10 million individual items to Good Relations. So we will do the conversion in here using some heuristics based on public feed formats and other data sources. So that is close to release, which and this again is data that will be updated every 24 hours. So other parts of the growing cloud of linked data are definitely equally detailed and equally large in size. But what is different in the commerce data sets is that this is really data that is changing on an hourly basis, but definitely on a daily basis, like prices and availability and the rest. And the second difference in this huge growing cloud of Good Relations data over other data sets is that you find companies, Fortune 500 companies, as same as smaller companies, that take extra effort, in some cases hire extra staff, to expose their data using Good Relations. Many other projects of exposing linked data, lifting existing sources to linked data, can only take place because there's public funding for it. Of course, this doesn't say anything about the quality of the data, but it gives a glimpse of the amount of interest in real business communities in publishing respective data. Also, I'm in contact with quite some startups, in particular in the US, informal contacts. I see their requests and I can guess some things from the types of questions they are asking. So I expect several novel products and services to be released on the basis of Good Relations data in the next coming months. Just to give you an idea, I mean, I think by the end of the year we will have at least 1 billion triples of commerce data, just Good Relations triples containing a class or a property from the Good Relations vocabulary.
Sounds
but
good.
It can also be 10 times as much. I mean, there are 19 million SMEs in Europe, and basically for each of them it would make sense to expose at least the basic information using Good Relations.
Yes, indeed. Now, you mentioned currency and timeliness there a few times, you know, in terms of releases every hour or every 24 hours or whatever it may be. And clearly in the commerce space, that's actually quite important, especially when it comes to offers. Does Good Relations have a mechanism for clearing out the old stuff?
Yes, there are two mechanisms. First of all, the HTTP protocol provides a mechanism for telling how long you can rely on that data, because with the traditional HTTP caching, the server can tell any consumer for how long a static copy of that data may be valid. So that's a default feature of HTTP. Good Relations also has valid from and valid through properties that can be attached to offers. You will soon also be able to attach it to opening hours. You can attach it to price information. Basically to these two, you can explicitly indicate that. So even if you cannot rely on the HTTP protocol parameters for assessing the validity of a statement, you can explicitly include it in the data you publish. So a typical scenario will be that a shop uses a longer validity for the general offering, like we sell cars or we sell Ford T cars, and uses a shorter interval in the price specification. So says this price will only hold for an hour or for a day or for a week. Basically, most shops will usually employ heuristics to predict that interval. Maybe just take the date and time of creating the metadata as the starting date and time, and add 24 hours or something like that. But there is an explicit mechanism for telling, okay, this data may still be valid, but it is no longer guaranteed to be valid.
Right, okay.
You should also keep in mind that, I mean, Good Relations is about supporting the early stages of a business transaction, finding potential suppliers, and filtering and ranking those. It is not. I don't really think that anytime soon there will really be automated agents carrying out transactions for us. We will have human interaction before you click the buy now button, in my opinion. So you don't need a perfect mechanism for representing all aspects of the offering. So if you have doubts as far as credibility, trustworthiness is concerned or so, a human will also be in the loop.
Absolutely. I guess it's about narrowing down the false
exactly.
positives. I mean, certainly if you use something like Google Product Search now, you do a search there and you get all these amazing looking prices. But when you click through, you find that the price has gone up or it's out of stock or whatever it may be. And that seems to happen with depressing frequency at the moment.
Yeah, actually, what I think the next challenge, I mean, this year is basically dedicated to bringing Good Relations to full swing in terms of data production. The really interesting research and engineering questions will follow once the data space is really large and in the virtuous circle of adoption and really living, and that will be about really filtering and ranking such data. We are already working on simple mechanisms for data quality management, an issue that has long been overlooked by the linked data community, because if you re-expose existing data sources on a web of linked data, then usually you inherit all the quality issues from the source, which can be like missing strings, referential problems, and the like. And I think what search engines and any kind of applications will have to implement very soon are ranking mechanisms for assessing the quality of that metadata. And you will use lots of variables. I mean, same as Google is using 200 or 300 variables for assessing the relevance of a hit, we will use 200 or 300 variables to assess the quality, trustworthiness, freshness, and the like of a respective statement. That can be on a graph level that I say, well, okay, the graphs from this side seem to be out of date. It can also be on a graph profile level, like saying, okay, company foo.com is always getting the valid through statements wrong, so you should ignore those from that graph, and the like. But all this, I mean, this will be, as soon as the graph gets bigger, this will be key challenges to be tackled.
And presumably these same approaches would help us to address the issue of people maliciously corrupting the graph, you know, putting in prices that simply aren't true.
Yeah, exactly. That is, I think that's a very important point you're raising. Many people assume that rich metadata in commerce is deemed to fail because people will try to fool the data, to manipulate the data, to do basically spamming and cloaking on a level of structured data. of course, it's technically possible to publish false statements, but it's important that people understand that the impact, the benefit of doing so, will be much smaller with structured data than with unstructured or very lightly structured data. Because, I mean, good relations and structured data is about increasing findability on the long tail of search in regarding very specific things. It doesn't really help you a lot if, I mean, if you are selling... say if you're renting out cars in Arizona, and you represent your data falsely that you are selling cars in Texas, then you will not gain a single cent of additional business. So on the long tail, for the very popular searches, yeah, like searching for the names of pop stars on Google. Of course, there's a strong incentive to redirect this huge amounts of traffic to your malicious site. I don't think it will be really efficient strategy to try to fool the two or three people who use your very specific product in a very specific moment in time to a site that offers something completely different. And as you said, I mean, malicious differences between the prices in the metadata and the actual prices, you will be able to spot that by pretty straightforward heuristics, and you will punish graphs that use incorrect metadata. Currently, the search engines encourage site owners to closely couple the visible part of their pages with the rich metadata. But I don't think that will be a sufficient technique to prevent that. But on the other hand, it's really simple to predict. First of all, it's pretty simple to predict and spot incorrect rich metadata using statistical means and using logics and the like. And second, it is much more difficult to create malicious metadata that cannot be automatically spotted as such. I mean, you know those simple examples that people can spot fraudulent transactions just by comparing the distribution of digits in the receipts with the expected distribution of digits. You know that the IRS and others are using such techniques. Yes. Yeah, and it is already difficult to create fraudulent receipts that have the proper distribution of trailing digits. And it will be much more difficult to forge rich commerce metadata that follows the distribution properties of real e-commerce data. But I mean, this is open research.
Yeah, I think the underlying story here is that more structure means that the data is more understandable. And being more understandable means that it's much easier to actually find suspect data. You have the statistical mechanisms that Martin was alluding to. You can discover, you know, things that are outliers. You can also find things that are very atypical relationships. And while atypical relationships might be interesting, they typically indicate that something is a little out of the, you know, obviously out of norm, and therefore, you know, should probably be in a pile that requires further investigation.
Yeah, it can be either more specific or it can be. I think individual specificity, like a rarely used property, will rather indicate a specific semantics. But if you have massive repetition of patterns, like multiple properties with the same values and the like, then this will rather indicate fraudulent data. But again, I fully agree with Jamie that since you have more structure, the data is more accessible at a computational level, so you need less computing power to do anything meaningful with data, which also means you can apply more heuristics for spotting spam. I think it's also important at this point that we mention that, I mean, good relations is not about representing 100% of the semantics in a logical form. It is about finding a good... The working assumption is only that if you add more structure and if you can populate that structure with sufficient quality, then you reduce the computational complexity of a precise search for suppliers on a web scale. So I expect that many queries will on the web of linked data for in commerce scenarios, they will not be like two-line SparkQL queries, but they will be complex queries involving navigation using structure and using regular expressions or any other kind of filters on the textual context of much smaller chunks of strings. So, for example, you will search for a node of which you know it's an electronics product and that contains the word camcorder in its RDFS label, or and then you could use other linked data sources, like, for example, DBpedia or Freebase for multilingual for translations. You know that the Wikipedia page for camcorder links to the respective German or French page. Then you have a proper French translation, and then you can expand your search, your regex in the search for other languages. So you will really, it will really be hybrid searches that combine structure in the graph, maybe a little bit of formal semantics embedded in that graph. And then lots of clever filters on literals. And the working assumption is just that if you have more structure, then you need less machine, less memory, less hard disk to achieve more.
So you've talked there about computing to find patterns. You've talked about filters on literals and regular expression searching and all the rest of it. Who's going to do that? Is that something that Good Relations is doing on this graph? Is that something Freebase will do? Is it something Google and Yahoo will do? Or is it something just everybody who wants to search this stuff will have to do?
Well, from the economics perspective, it's there are studies that about 50% of the US gross domestic product is for creating and keeping alive the mechanisms for exchanging goods. So keeping allowing the exchange of goods, like markets and everything that's necessary for market exchanges. So transaction costs theory in economics and business management has created a lot of evidence for that. There is a seminal paper by Wallace and North showing that in the 1980s or 1970s, around that the gross domestic product was 50% of the gross domestic product of the United States of America was for transaction cost, for effort, making possible the exchange of goods, basically. Now, you see that if 50% of the GDP is for exchanging products and services between people, then you will immediately see the enormous impact that any technology can have that reduces the friction of the early transaction stages, like searching and selecting potential suppliers. So there is, first of all, from the global perspective, there's a huge economic incentive for using this potential. If you just join in the working hypothesis that more structure reduces the effort for handling it computationally, and if you reduce the effort for handling it computationally, then it will get cheaper. So if you buy in that very credible hypothesis, then you see there's really a lot of money to harvest. And now the question is, of course, how are the incentives and how is the effort distributed in there? So an important thing for a semantic technology to get broad adoption is that you have a proper distribution of incentives and costs. Now, in this scenario, it's the people from whom you'll need contributions have pretty obvious incentive structures. For any retailer, adding the respective metadata gets additional visibility, additional findability. And the nice thing is that you have two effects if you add Good Relations data right now. You have the immediate effect in current search engines, and at the same time, without doing anything on top of that, you increase your long-term visibility in the giant graph of commerce data that is currently being woven. So retailers have clear incentives. For manufacturers, you see, if they publish the data, they help anybody who tries to sell their products to communicate the individual technical advantages, the individual value proposition. So if a large manufacturer of consumer electronics publishes its data sheets in using good relations patterns, there's a strong incentive to do so. And again, we are not talking about millions investments in the order of millions of dollars. It will be like several thousand US dollar SEO activities that companies carry out for lesser goals. Now the question is, of course, who will go beyond this basic level of just exposing what you have, like this RDFizing or lifting of existing data, enriching it, adding something else. And there, of course, there are many possible scenarios. I think the most likely one is something like second-generation affiliate marketing, that by adding or by improving existing public data, you increase the findability of the underlying offer, and you can charge either the buy or the sell side for a small commission for that. So, for example, it could be that a small hotel in Italy describes itself in not-so-fluent English and a few good relations properties, and someone targeting the visibility of Italian tourist offers in the United States takes this data and adds more details or translations and the like, and replaces the transaction link from the original data by its own, and can then track anybody who finds that hotel only by means of the augmented good relations data, and then charge either side for a small commission on that. And since everything can be automated very well, even transactions in the order of magnitude of cents can be very valuable. And there can even be multi-hop connections of improvements of data.
But I think the real core story here, and who's going to do it, and you know, sort of what's possible, is that this data is actually being consumed today, and you're actually increasing the findability through the search engines today by actually having semantic markup in your pages and using well-known vocabularies. And so, you know, in some sense, Google and Yahoo and Bing already have a full corpus of all of the triples that are out there, along with all of the unstructured data. And they are already using that data to present results and to filter results in interesting ways. So the benefits to people actually exist today for doing this right now. Obviously, as Martin's describing, a lot more is possible once that ability to find that structured data has been exposed. And I think that's going to be a very interesting thing coming up in the future. Certainly things like Yahoo's Boss allows you to actually access that structured data so that you can actually incorporate it in other search applications or other applications that use search to discover where the structured data is located. Certainly you have semantic search engines like Sendichi as well, but those are much more focused at sort of the web application level. I think, you know, really the story here is how does the bootstrap take place? And by using web-scale identifiers, the fact that there is a well-known identifier for Apple, that there's a well-known identifier for Best Buy, that you can actually combine those to form an offer that's discoverable by a search engine, that's why people are actually adopting this today and actually getting value out of it.
Yeah, I think the nice thing is really that the immediate incentive is well sufficient to justify the effort, and as a positive side effect, you're paving the ground for findability in the next generation. So instead of SEO, search engine optimization, for one particular search engine as it is right now, you're optimizing the visibility, the findability of your offer for a multiplicity of target applications. And the existing ones provide a substantial incentive already now. So there's really no reason to postpone any kind of activities. If you operate a shop, it's really now is the time to add respective metadata.
So it sounds then as if this good relations vocabulary that we started out talking about plays quite an important role in sort of adding the structure and the richness to the web to enable better commerce to take place. So on that basis then, the vocabulary and its maintenance becomes quite important. How is it maintained at the moment and moving forward?
It is good relations is stable and I'd say like industrial strength quality. I mean there are no explicit guarantees, but it is available under a persistent pool namespace. It is currently undergoing only small cosmetic like service updates, so the namespace and the basic elements can be assumed to remain stable. Because that was also a requirement by Yahoo once again. So you can really use it right now. What we are still doing is that from new use case requirements, we're adding a few new properties in a backward compatible fashion. For example, adding validity statement intervals to opening hours so that you can say that the four Saturdays before Christmas you have differing opening hours. But really, I mean, the changes are cosmetics and don't require changes to 99% of the existing data. So it's a project hosted by the Bundeswehr University in Munich. So there's also, in a sense, long-term commitment and funding for it. So it is not a PhD project that will be shut down once I'll pack up my bags and go to new shores. So there's long-term commitment, institutional and practical, to keeping that alive. And since it's available under a liberal license, there's also people adopting it don't have to fear any future limitations on the access.
Okay. So where then do we go next? What are the next big steps? Presumably it's more data partners and more applications.
I think the next, really the next huge step will be what works well is having a growing amount of lightweight offering data and product data. The retail side is, I think by the end of the year, most major sites will at least have projects on implementing that. The next big leap will be having more structured data regarding the product model master data side. And this is why I'm particularly happy to be in this talk here with Jamie, because I think, and we've already spoken about that Freebase could be a very valuable, an extremely valuable location for hosting, for collating product data sheets for any major brand in the world. Because it's an attractive platform, it has strong identifiers, its internal architecture fits all the requirements for hosting product model master data in Freebase, and I think it's sufficiently visible even in non-technical communities so that there's incentive for companies, or that companies can be motivated to maintain the Freebase page about the latest digital camera in sufficient level of detail. And the mapping to good relations is technically trivial. I mean, it will require a bit of engineering, but it won't require a huge amount of research.
Right. I think that's, you know, sort of the interesting thing about this ecosystem, that when you look at Freebase as a semantic publishing platform, the ability for sort of that self-service that Martin is describing, so the manufacturers can come in and they can actually develop that master data that other people can then link to. We can provide the strong identifiers for, you know, whatever it is that they need in terms of the product line or the business entity. We have a ways for them to extend the data model. One of the things with sort of the large consortium process is that a lot of these retailers, even some of the manufacturers, need additional attributes. And it's not an easy process to go through and say, well, this is how we're going to actually extend the data model to take into account the specialized product that you're developing. Whereas with Freebase, because it's a socially managed vocabulary, you can go in and actually extend the vocabulary yourself, and that vocabulary then can be adopted by sort of the larger Freebase community and then be used actually externally. And I think that's sort of one of the interesting services that Freebase provides. It's really this repository for specific entity data, but also for the development of the vocabularies that can be used by the external linked data community.
And probably what's important to add in here is that if the only if anybody adding new product features using Freebase follows just a very simple meta model that is contained in good relations for designing specific vocabularies for vertical industries, which is basically about just choosing whether a product feature is a quantitative or a qualitative feature, or something holding a string or a date. Just this simple conceptual choice, if this is made, then the resulting user-contributed properties can be integrated much more easily with other data sources. For example, if you have user-created new attributes, then of course you'll have additional heterogeneity. But if you follow the good relations meta model for properties, then it's relatively straightforward to map properties that stand for the same quality but use just a different unit of measurement, like screen size in centimeters versus screen size in inches and the like. So with a minimal tweak in the wizard for creating new properties, you could turn Freebase into the largest authoring platform for commerce master data, and immediately, without additional human intervention, access that data for any external application or, of course, for Freebase itself. One thing I would like to add in here, because it's all about communicating value and new features, new properties. Some e-commerce players often fear that linked data will just increase the already brutal price comparison. So why don't we need an additional price comparison service? We already have that. I mean, and the price difference is in the order of magnitude of cents. In fact, I think that linked data will not increase price competition, but it will rather relax it a little bit, because currently we have a bit of an overly fierce price competition in many sectors, because consumers are unable to compare products in the full, using the full depth and breadth of the web. Usually, if you're looking for the best MP3 player or digital camera for your purpose, what you'll have to do is constrain your search very quickly to one or two product models, and then just do price comparison shopping on the model. But you might miss an alternative offer that is $20 or $30 more expensive, but has certain features that are very, very valuable for you. So currently, the search space of consumers is, consumers have to narrow down their search space prematurely to a few makes and models using current search engines, and then do overly fierce price comparison shopping on that small subset, because they are not able to do deep comparison shopping across all makes and models and all offers in parallel. For example, we have model master data in good relations for more than 4,000 MP3 players that are still relevant for trade, that are still available at least in eBay auctions. Nobody searching for an MP3 player is able to compare 4,000 models and the millions of offers relating to one of those 4,000 models when he or she navigates the web. But with structured data following the good relations pattern, you can get really compare technical features and the impact on price of those technical features in parallel, in real time. So in effect, I think customers will get more value for more utility for their dollars, and producers of goods will be able to communicate the individual value proposition with a lot less loss across the web as a communication channel.
Sounds good. And of course, it's not just about comparison either. It's about accurate description of the products you already have. So, you know, my printer being able to specify the toner cartridge it needs using good relations and order that from Best Buy. My smart fridge being able to tell Tesco that I want a liter of milk.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, good relations also provides properties like is consumable for, is spare part for, so that you could link a certain toner cartridge to a certain printer. And this, again, is something where Freebase as an authoring platform seems incredibly promising to me, because if a single user spots that a certain toner cartridge works or doesn't work with a certain printer, then this can be used by anybody searching for a toner cartridge for a given printer.
Yes, indeed. Good. Well, I'm conscious of the time, so I think we're going to have to wrap up there. But thank you both very much for what's been a very interesting conversation. And I look forward to seeing how Good Relations moves forward from here. So thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for the invitation, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks. Goodbye.